Access number 28673, Mr. Don Mitchard, Real 13. Now, we've got you to the point where it's late November, 1942. You're at Souk El Abra in Tunisia.
Yes.
First you're under a fair amount of attack, but you're gradually establishing control, I presume.
Yes.
What do you remember next? What's the next thing that comes to your
mind? Well, the next thing was, well, to be honest, we were bogged down at it in Tunisia, and so was the army. They'd started off, they were advancing like nobody's business, and they were expecting or hoping to be in Tunis by Christmas. But they were stopped in their tracks for other reasons. By this time, of course, the OC was General Eisenhower. And the Yanks had got very little, well, they got no experience. They'd come straight over from America. He was in charge. And I think it was always felt that the army, that the First Army could have gone on, but he stopped them. And from then on, we were bogged down in Tunisia for the winter, really. Mind you, having said that, we were bogged down, but of course the 8th Army were coming along the North African coast and doing great guns. But we then settled down into a pattern on our operational flying, of doing sweeps and ground strafing and all sorts of, well, various things, and mostly defensive work because we were being attacked. And at some stage, now I can't remember whether it was just before Christmas or after, we got a big shock. Because suddenly the Focke-Wulf 190 appeared. And that, of course, bearing in mind that we were flying Spitfire 5s, which was a nice airplane, but the Focke-Wulf 190 could outclimb it and outturn it. It was the Germans had developed this blooming thing, and it was being used over here in northern France, of course, but we didn't expect to see the thing in North Africa at all. But for some reason or other, the Germans decided differently, and the Focke-Wulf 190, which meant that we were really in a difficult situation. We weren't in the same league.
How could you deal with it? I mean,
well, you just had to do as best you could. I mean, we didn't, bearing in mind that although they appeared, there wasn't a great deal of them. There was still most of our opposition at that time was still the ME-109. The ME-109E, I think it was, which was the one that we could cope with all right. We did come across a few of the Italians, the Macchis, but they were pretty hopeless as fighter pilots. They seemed to like doing their aerobatics, and that was about it, I think. So they didn't bother us.
The Mackie,
M-A-C-C-H-I, I think it is. But we didn't see many of them. They were mostly the ME-109s, the Germans.
Any particular combat or patrol or raid or ground strafing that you remember from that time? I know it's, you know, you don't remember it day by day, and you haven't got your logbook with you, it's with your family, but any particular raids or things that you remember from that?
Yes. You see, at this time, then, we were starting to take the fight to the Germans, or trying to, perhaps. And the bombers, we were starting bombing Tunisia. Now, the Yanks were coming into it now, and the Yanks, in fact, had got flying fortresses based further back, and their light bombers. And so they started to do bombing, as did we. And there was an action where, at one particular time, where we had a bombing mission by our own... I'm trying to think of the name of the airplane. I think it was Mitchell's that the RAF were flying. And they went on a bombing mission of, I think there were about 12 of them, led by a wing commander, Malcolm, very well known name in the RAF, because he led this bombing mission, and they got to a stage where they were completely outnumbered. They didn't have any, they had escorts, but none of us could help them, because we saw action going on, and all the lot were shot down. And Wing Commander Malcolm received the Victoria Cross because he went pressing on, but it was a disaster. But you know, you get these sometimes in wartime, don't you, like Arnhem was. And this Wing Commander, this Malcolm, he is the RAF Benevolent Fund, still retain his name. And at Tangmere, there's a road called Malcolm Road. He's a chap that's very much revered in the RAF, because he lost all his mates, all his squadron got shot down. But that was what it was like then. So if you said, did I remember a particular one? Yes, that one.
But you couldn't get off to support them?
No. We were engaged somewhere else, I think. I can't really remember, but they found themselves without support. I think their actual escorts had been nobbled and shot down, and one thing or another. They found themselves without escorts, but they still went on and did the bombing, which is what he got his VC for.
Any other incidents?
Yes, we there was a hill there. Well, there was a town called Medjez El Bab, which was on Hill 60. And it was a hill that, in those days, the hills had a dominance on the ground. And we were constantly attacking that Hill 60, I think it was called, and Medjez El Bab. There's a big cemetery there now, I think, that one or two of my friends were shot down there. In fact, one of my friends was called George. His brother was Sailor Milan. George Milan, that was his brother, and he was killed there.
Were you there? Do you remember what happened?
No, I wasn't on that actual flight. He reckoned he was shot down by the army, but. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But it was all a bit difficult then. And at that particular time, it was after Christmas, in the new year, that they decided to build some new airfields. Well, to lay down some new air strips. And they've built four in the same valley. And this was at a place called Souk El Kemis, instead of Souk El Abra. And it was spelt K-Souk El K-H-E-M-I-S. Souk El Kemis.
This is fairly near, is it? Or?
Yeah, not very far from Souk El Abra. But it was, I suppose it would be, once again, the commandos. The airfield construction people laid down four airfields, and they gave them the name of four stations in London. That was Waterloo, Charing Cross, I forget what they were called, but we were at again I've lost the name.
It's all right, don't worry.
So it's a station that come back to me. One of the stations in London.
St. Pancras or something, Marylebone.
Wasn't that? But I'll think about it. And we by this time we'd been joined by other wings. So we had quite a lot of we had about several fighter wings there, and quite a lot of airplanes by this time, but all concentrated on that one area. You see. And to be honest, I could imagine that the flying bit would be a bit like it was in the Battle of Britain. There was something going on all the time, you know, because the Germans were attacking us all the time. And as I say, when they appeared with their Focke-Wulf 190, that was a problem. But I'll come to it later on, but they did re-equip us with Spitfire 9s, which...
While you were out there.
Yeah. But that was while I was away in hospital, but I'll tell you that was a bit later on, so I'll get to that later.
So it's a build-up of air strength. I mean, were you getting air superiority? I mean, you know, it takes a while to have
no,
the Germans down.
Not superiority, but we were beginning to build it up, I think, but... The Germans, of course, let's face it, were concentrating on trying to keep us bogged down because they didn't want they wanted to hang on in North Africa, obviously, and they weren't doing too well on the 8th Army front. So I think they were trying to we were trying to establish air superiority, and they were trying to make sure that we didn't get it. But and the other thing was that the Yanks coming into it. They were doing a lot of bombing. They had fortresses at the back, but they had their light bombers as well. And they, because they had come straight from America, they had no experience. And their navigators were pretty hopeless. And quite a lot of RAF navigators were seconded to the Americans out there to help them out. Because I think... Well, even our chaps that learnt to fly out there said the navigation wasn't very good because when you fly in America, you fly from one place to another and there's the name of the town written on the gas holder so, and about one railway line. So, you know, the navigation. And in those days, don't forget, we didn't have any electronic assistance. It was all dead reckoning navigation. So a lot of RAF navigators were seconded to them. Their fighters were inexperienced as well, but they gradually got the experience. I mean, when we first were out there, we saw a load of P-38s flying over in close formation, you know, which, as I said to you earlier on, was disaster. The next thing you knew, we seeing them coming back one at a time with ME-109s up their backsides, you know. But they learnt. As everybody does, but it turned into during that winter was a lot of air activity, but the ground troops weren't moving very very quickly.
And what were your conditions of living like? You know, I mean, because you're in this.
Well, we lived in tents.
It sounds an awful place. What was your accommodation, your food like? The
right.
Basics.
Well, you see, we lived, or we tried to sort of, our living place was away from the airstrip for obvious reasons. And where we were living in Suco Chemist at Houston, I think the name of our, I think it was Houston, unless another name comes back to me.
Don't worry.
We had our living quarters in a little farm that was not far away, but we all lived in tents. In fact, we had tents. But
so it was a farm, but you were in a tent at the farm.
We slept in the tent, but in the farm we had a little room there, which was our mess room where we ate. You know, we just made the best of it, I suppose, really.
And what was it like in the tent? Were it one each or five? You know, loads. No, of
there was those little bell tent things. There's about four or five of us in a tent. Not very good, to be honest. And of course, when we got bombed, you'd find people trying to get underneath a palliasse for shelter, which of course was rubbish because it wouldn't stop anything. But that was just a natural reaction, I think.
Now, what food did you get out there?
We got those rations. Is it K rations?
That's American, isn't it?
No, that's yeah. That we had a
or were you getting British compo, which is
different. We were getting the British. I thought it. Was it compo? Well, I forget what it was called. It was a set thing, for 7 days, wasn't it, or something?
That's the compo ration system. Now, what was it like? What did you think of it? Because it's not what the RAF normally gets, is it?
No, it was as good as it could be, I think, but. not very, very nice. I find that, I found that we had to eat a lot of corned beef, bully beef, and biscuits, which were rather hard. And I find now that I don't like corned beef, because I think probably because of that very reason. Spam, yeah, I can, because that was a luxury that we used to get, but not the corned beef. But the rations, they were quite good rations, really. I mean, they even had cigarettes and things in there, you see.
What else would you get? You've got the corned beef, biscuits.
Yes.
What else did you get in
there? McConaughey's stew, wasn't it?
And what was that like?
Not very good, but all right. I suppose you tended to feel that you had to put up with it. And by this time we'd been joined by our ground crew, and they were looking after us, and the cooks and all the rest of it, so we weren't doing too badly, except that they had very basic stuff to do their cooking with. But they used to go out and buy or find chicken from the local Arabs and stuff like that, you know, which people used to use their initiative to get hold of. And so we did used to get the odd luxury and a chicken or something like that.
Was there a water shortage? Or I mean, I know it's not desert, but sometimes there's not much water about in these places. Was there any problem with water or tea or whatever?
No. We had to put the stuff into, you know, they gave us some stuff to put in the water to purify it up to a point, I suppose, and boil it, mostly boiled stuff, but the cooks used to do all that. So, yeah, I don't ever remember being short of water or food, but the food was a bit unimaginative, you know what I mean? But then you would expect that, so nobody complained very much.
What about, how'd you get on with the Arabs or the Tunisians, whichever way you look at it?
We didn't have a lot to do with them, really, but they could be a bit nasty.
In what way?
Well, once we did find that we found some Arabs in our group, our headquarters, our flight, and there were some parachutes lying about there, and we chased them off, and when we looked at the parachutes, somebody, and it was obviously them, had there was it, with a parachute, when you pull the ripcord, there's two pins that come out, and the whole thing flies open, and out comes the parachute. And somebody had bent those two pins back so that they wouldn't work. And that was obviously those Arabs. Now, whether they were genuine Arabs or German spies in drag, we don't know. But we were pretty sure that that was a bit of sabotage that they'd try. But our relations with them weren't too bad. They used to come and bring eggs in, you know, and we used to barter with them. And there was a rumour that one American had a contract with a local Arab farmer, that if he supplied him with a dozen or 100 eggs or something every day till the end of the war, at the end of the war, that the aeroplane would be his. And that was the contract. Well, of course, they moved on before that. But I don't suppose he missed his eggs too much because, So
the weather like?
Because the weather was
winter,
bad.
You're smack in winter, but on the other hand, you're in North Africa. I
mean, you would think it would be hot, wouldn't you? But it wasn't. The weather was wet. We had a lot of rain, and we suffered a lot with mud. It sounds a bit unusual, but it was a bit like... Well, I say it's a bit like Ypres, but I don't suppose it was. But that's
sort of cold then. Was it cold during the day? Or
cold at night.
What about in the day?
No, it wasn't cold, but it wasn't hot. It was, warm and wet. At night it used to get very cold, but then that's what happens out there, isn't it? We had plenty of blankets to wrap up in, so that was all right.
Would you get any German night raids? Because I'd have thought that was the ideal time for them to raid.
Yes, we
night.
Did.
What were they like?
Bit unpleasant if you're on the end of it, because we didn't, we couldn't do anything about it. We couldn't fly at night, but we did have by that time, of course, night fighter squadrons out there.
What was it like when the bombs came down? Would you have a slit trench or what?
Well, if you were, it depends where you were. As I mean, I say,
you wouldn't normally be at the airfield, I presume.
No, not at night. You'd be away from the airfield. But if you were in your tent, of course, as I said to you a bit earlier on, you try and get shelter under the pillow or something, which wasn't going to help much. But
so you hadn't dug slit trenches.
Oh yes. We used to dive into them if it was a bit bad raid into the slit trench. And but of course sometimes they were filled up with water fairly quickly, so that wasn't very pleasant. But you know, you jump into a trench and find that you're up to your shoulders in water, which may have been better than being up to your shoulders in a bomb.
So what happens next then? Now we're deep in winter.
Mm. Well, then I got clobbered.
Now tell us that story. That's probably as far as we'll get today.
Yes, okay. Well, I went out on a...
Do you know the date?
Don't know the exact date, no. I could let you know.
Approximately?
Yes. Mid-January, I think.
Now, what exactly happened? How did you get clobbered, as you put it?
Well, we were doing an air-to-ground strafing job on a place called Kawan, which is one of the special mosques.
How they've got.
Kauran, I think it is, something like that.
Yeah, that's close. It's just to give a phonetic idea.
Yeah, Kawan. And we were, and I did get hit by light anti-aircraft fire, which mucked up my pneumatics and my hydraulics and I got some bits of shrapnel in my leg and stuff like that. I managed to get back to the base and crash land and all the rest of it.
Now tell us, how badly were you wounded? Could you feel it? Because you can't always feel these wounds, I believe.
I couldn't feel it. And I don't remember, to be honest. I think I was might have been slightly concussed. I honestly don't remember much about it, except that when they got me out.
You don't remember the crash landing, that sort of thing.
Not really, no. I'm probably vague about the whole thing, but I don't. But I know when they got me out, they decided that the MO looked at me, and I had actually some tummy trouble, and I think he decided that perhaps it would be best if they sent me back to base hospital for a checkup, which I did. They sent me back.
Where to?
Algiers. So I got a flight back to Algiers.
Now, how bad, when you sort of came to, how bad were the, what sort of wounds did you
have? Well, they weren't anything much. They were just surface wounds, really.
So, like, bad, very bad cuts, sort of thing?
Yeah, that's right.
Rather than a, you know the difference.
Yeah, I didn't have a leg full of shrapnel or anything like that.
And did they heal reasonably well?
Yes.
Now, what about tummy trouble? Let's talk about that anyway. Was this sort of diarrhea or dysentery? What was up with you?
I'd had... Yes, tummy trouble, pains in my stomach, and the MO thought it might have been the reaction from, I told you, when I got appendicitis, might have been something to do with that, because in those days, of course, that was quite a serious illness, wasn't it? So they sent me back to base hospital, where I was examined by everybody, and I got better, and after a while they said yes, you're okay.
Now, what were conditions like in the hospital?
They were good, considering what I'd been used to. It was like in a big tent, most of it, and of course I had to wear hospital blue, which was something new for me, but I always think that I missed out a bit, because there were Americans were there as well, and you didn't know who was what. And I got I went past a queue and I discovered that they were handing out, you know, in the American Army, if you're wounded, you get a thing called the Purple Heart. And they were handing out these Purple Hearts, you know, and I'd always kicked myself because I reckoned that if I'd stood in the queue, they'd have given me one, which would have been a nice keepsake, but I didn't, so...
But what was the hospital like? I mean, was it sort of proper buildings, or was it tents? Or
it was mostly tents, in and they it was the nurses were all service nurses, you know, Queen Alexandra's QAs, aren't they? The army nurses, and the Princess Mary's were the RAF nurses.
So you were well looked after.
Oh yes.
Good food.
Well, as good as you'd expect. Yeah, yeah.
And how long were you in there for?
I was in there about 3 weeks, I think.
So just, well, into February.
Yeah. And then I went back to the squadron.
Well, how did you feel about going back into active service? Because you've now done quite a bit of it. I mean,
frightened, to be honest, although I didn't say so, obviously, but yes.
Would you rather not have gone back?
At the time, I think the answer probably would have been yes, but I wouldn't have said so and I wouldn't have not gone. Because you didn't do things like that. But when I got back to the squadron, they, in the meantime, had got a significant change because they'd been re-equipped with Spitfire 9s. They'd gone off to Gibraltar to pick them up and threw them back from Gib.
Now, were they still at Souk El Kem?
Yeah, but they got 9s, and they then had...
Now, what is the difference? I mean, to us... From now, we can't sort of think of
it. No. Well, the Spitfire 9 had a two-stage supercharger on it. You see, the old, the 5s, which was the one we've been flying, didn't have, they had an ordinary supercharger, which went up to boost 18, I think, or whatever. And they had to combat the Fokker 490. And Rolls-Royce developed this two-stage supercharger. And what happened was that the second stage came in at about 12,000 feet and used to leap forward because the supercharger would come in. You could either let it come in automatically or you could do it manually with a switch. Now, we found that there was a bit of a problem automatically, because if we were doing our battle climbs, which I explained to you before, and sometimes if you were climbing together and one airplane supercharger might come in a bit before one of the others, you know. So the CO said, we'll do it manually and I will give you the order when we swap over to second stage supercharger. And he decided that the code word would be up your pipe. And he said, so it would be up your pipe. And then when on the word pipe, everybody would switch their supercharges on and jump forward. So
did it make a real difference?
Tremendous difference, yes. Yes.
They really shot forward.
Yes. And of course, at higher, bearing in mind that most of your operational flying would be around the 20,000 feet mark, and that was when it was in its ideal situation.
How did they compare to the Focke-Wulf 190s now? That, you know, after you got these. So.
Oh well, you're on equal terms again. You know, it was a big difference. So now, we were lucky in our squadron because we were the first squadron to get the 9s, but later on, of course, others got them. But I think, having flown all the marks of the airplane, of the Spitfire you can think of, in my opinion, the Mark 9 is the best of the lot. It's a lovely airplane.
Why?
Don't know. Everything about it was great. The handling, it had all the Spitfire advantages, and it had the rate of climb, which was better. It was just a lovely airplane, in my opinion, and I think most people would probably say the same.
Any changes in arm? Any other changes? Do you see what I mean? Any other advances in it? Or
was
it
no, the same? Armament was the same. That was 2 cannon and 4 machine guns. On the Spitfire 9Bs, which was the ones most of us flew anyway. But of course, they did progress on from that, because they put later on, they put the Griffin engine in, made the Spitfire 14, which had a five bladed.
We might come back. We'll probably come back. So, but nothing else was different then. It was just really the engine in the 9.
Yes.